Hello, everyone. Dave Levinsky here from Growth Inc., and I'm really excited today to be able to interview John Morris. John Morris is the managing director of GKM Ventures, which is a venture capital firm that has made investments in companies in the communications, IT, digital media, and semiconductor spaces. John is also the immediate past chairman of the Tech Coast Angels, the largest angel investor organization in the United States, which invests in startups and early stage companies. John is also the past president and a co-founder of the Tech Coast Angels' Los Angeles Network, and John is also the president of the Western Region Association of the Small Business Investment Companies. John also has a lot of operational experience, as well as he sits on the board of directors for several companies. So overall, John has a wealth of knowledge on raising capital for companies at numerous stages of their development, and as such, I'm really excited to speak with John today on these topics. So, John, thanks again for taking the time to speak with me today.
Okay, glad to be here.
Excellent. So John, I was hoping that you could start by telling us your views on what is the difference between funding from individual angel investors versus angel investor networks and venture capitalists.
Well, there's pretty big differences. Individual investors really represent people that are sometimes the hardest to organize because they're doing it for individual reasons. Maybe they have domain expertise, or they know the founders, or there's some connection between them and the founding team. Angel networks are a more common phenomenon over the last 10 years, especially in the United States. Most of the major metropolitan areas have formed one kind of angel investor network or another. Most of it got started in Silicon Valley in the mid-1990s. The Tech Coast Angels was founded following a model built in the mid-1990s, the Band of Angels in Silicon Valley, and we kind of used that model to build out what has become the largest organized angel network in the country with five locations, five individual networks, Santa Barbara, Westlake Village, which is a suburban community north of Los Angeles, Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Diego, and we're even starting a smaller network out in an area east of Los Angeles in an area called the Inland Empire. So angel networks are trying to source deal flow, provide a process for vetting members and vetting deals so that individuals can work together, share that domain expertise, do the diligence, help founders, and kind of be a little more process intense in pulling together the necessary early stage rounds. Venture capitalists, are professionals and they're writing bigger checks. They have, they're investing other people's money. They're not investing their own money per se, and have perhaps a more strident diligence process. And so, typically, they are somewhat flexible in amounts of money they want to invest, but many times, depending on the size of the fund, they are struggling with making investments that have sufficient opportunity to put money to work so that the returns can actually make a difference. So often angel investors are called upon to make the first round of investment, and the venture capitalists come by and try to make the second professional round. I just finished an interview with two founders here in Los Angeles just an hour ago where a local venture capitalist said, geez, I really like these people. I really like the model. It's a little too early for us. Our minimum would be maybe $2 million. They really need to raise maybe sub $500,000 in an early stage, seed stage round to kind of prove out that it works and then bring it back to us, and we'd love to invest in it. We'll help you do the Series B. But that's not a commitment. That's just showing interest, and it's a good referral. The founders are well represented coming into an angel investor network from a venture capitalist, but the angels are kind of called upon to take some of the more serious risk in vetting the early business plan. So that's a long-winded answer to your question.
That's a great answer, though. One thing that you mentioned, which I found really interesting, was the story you just told about the company, the founders that were referred to angels from the venture capitalists. And based on that, would you think it's a good idea for a company seeking a small round of capital to sort of do the same, to start approaching venture capitalists sooner rather than later, to start thinking about, you know, longer term and possibly also getting references from the VC firms.
It's certainly a good thing to do, and not every entrepreneur has got the network resources to do that and may not be able to get into the appropriate venture funds. These people had a prior relationship with a venture capital. They were in a previous venture-backed company that got successfully sold. They didn't make a lot of money, but they were familiar with the process, so they were on a first-name basis with this particular venture guy. And founders that have that capability are always well advised to use those relationships, keep them alive, and they're very meaningful to the angel investor networks when they get them. But it's not always, I always encourage entrepreneurs that are getting started to make sure they understand the vocabulary, make sure they understand the differences in venture capitalists, they network to get to know them, and also in parallel they're approaching the angel investor network. In Los Angeles now, there are several sources of early stage. There's some successful entrepreneurs who are kind of holding themselves out as, you know, kind of private family office venture funds. They work often with the what we call the established angel networks. And there's some small VC funds that are kind of looking to collaborate with the angel networks and help source some deal flow and be able to participate in early Series A, you know, rounds where these small venture funds are kind of like angel funds because they're investing, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, not millions of dollars, and so their appetite is trying to get into deals ahead of the more the better funded, more traditional venture funds. But it's always a great idea to make sure you know the vocabulary, you know who the players are, you know how the game is played, and so that when you come into angel investor networks, you're well familiar, you know what the exits are, you know who your next investors are likely to be, and that little community that you've kind of, you know, networked into will really help you make sure you're aware of the pitfalls, but you're also aware of the process. Valuations and terms of terminology often get entrepreneurs really confused about what they can do and what they should do.
Agreed.
That's a great suggestion if you can do it, but in most cases you there's no reason you can't do it. It's just taking the time to do it. I think a lot of misguided entrepreneurs jump right in thinking they're going to raise angel money off the bat without having done that kind of homework, and those guys usually are come to a rude awakening that they're really poorly prepared.
Got it. Agreed. So he talked about how the venture capitalists, they write bigger checks, they are using other people's money, they have to really focus on their returns. That's sort of how the venture capitalists invest. So why do angels invest? What are the rationale and the reasons behind angel investments?
Well, it's as varied as there are a number of members, but most enjoy the collaboration. Most are successful business people. When most of our members come from existing members, the member that's inviting a friend to come in, they say, "Geez, this is a great group of guys. I'd like to be part of this. This is a really community. It's kind of a give back, and maybe I make some money, and maybe I can find interesting companies to be part of, to be on the board of, to be an investor in." So I think it's just the fact that they've had some success in their life. They're an accredited investor. They've got some skills. They're, you know, maybe in between assignments. Maybe they sold their company and they're looking to do something else, or they are close to being retired. Were retired early, and you know, said, "Yeah, this is a great thing to keep me busy. Can't be on the golf course all the time, and this is a wonderful group of people." I think the camaraderie of the network is really a real big value to the members, and you find in the case of the Tech Coast Angels, these are best friends that have been working together at meetings, at dinners, at screening sessions, and diligence sessions for more than 10 years. Some of my best friends are fellow members.
Excellent. And can you give like an average profile? Is it mostly former entrepreneurs? Is it mostly executives, former executives, or current executives, or a mixture? Is there any way to pinpoint
Angels,
the average?
There's a great deal of entrepreneurial activity. I'm just thinking around. We have a few guys that came out of big companies, but for the most part, most of our members had their own business or were involved in a small business, not large, Fortune 500 companies. That mindset is not interested in angel investing. They really don't understand it. They don't have any experience, and really don't view this as something they want to do. It's the guys that seem to be in smaller businesses that were entrepreneurs themselves, understand what it takes, understand how much benefit they might have had if there was such an organization when they were starting their company. So I think for the most part, the members of the Tech Coast Angels, while varied, tend to be on the smaller companies than the big, large corporations. Most of the members, surprising amount of our members are fairly young, in their 40s, and that still want to be active, still want to be engaged. Occasionally, some of our members will step in to companies and that they've invested in and take on a more full-time role than just a passive investor.
Excellent. That's something that most people are not aware of. That's a great thing, because these are people that have a lot of operational experience, and that's why they're in the position they're in right now.
And the professional investors, the venture capital funds, they're really trying to build a portfolio, trying to get a return, trying to. They're in the business of managing a fund, and it's likely that they want to raise multiple funds. So they're making decisions based on the portfolio effect and executing on a strategy that they raise the money with. So they're a little more narrowly focused, where angel investors can, are investing their own money. There's no portfolio, maybe a little bit of in the back of their mind, but they're looking to invest in innovation and get to know, up and coming entrepreneurs and be part of that ecosystem. A little bit different mentality.
Got it. You mentioned the word accredited. Do you think you can briefly define that for those?
Well, what I understand it is, it's $1 million. It's a legal term, and I think it's $1 million of liquid equity, excluding your residence. So it's in today's market. That's not a very high barrier, but we really encourage members. Members are we're trying to get our members to be diversified. We don't want members piling in on any one deal. We try to democratize the process so that in every deal, members are all kind of investing the same amount, which on average ranges a low of 15 and a high of 50. That's pretty. That is 95% of TCA investments are kind of maybe 20. 5,000 would be the midpoint and the most common amount. So it's not a lot of money, and we ask members in the Tech Coast Angels that they be willing, not commit. We're not saying you must invest, but we want you to be thinking of making two investments a year.
Got it.
Now we don't think that if that's not what you're thinking of doing, then you shouldn't be a member.
Got it. Now, when you say the average of 25,000, that's per member, and a lot of times multiple members will invest in a certain company. Is that correct?
Oh yeah. So you at $25,000, raising, you need 25, 30 members to make a decent financing work. So you need a lot of members. So we have 300 members across 5 locations, and so the founding team that's out looking to raise Tech Coast Angel money is making presentations to San Diego, to Orange County, to Los Angeles, and Santa Barbara. So we have an intense process. It's good news and it's bad news, because it's a virtual roadshow of presentations, and you're picking up relatively small checks. You're not going out and getting 5 guys to write $100,000 each and raise $500,000. That's not our model. Never has been, and highly unlikely it would be. There are individuals that consider themselves, really high net worth guys that occasionally show up in the cap structure for a small company having made that kind of investment, but they're not members of an organized group.
Got it. Now, can you talk about the difference between that, between, you know, individuals called rogue angels and a group? Are there, you know, do a lot of the members of Techos Angels, did they start as individual investors on their own? And if so, can you sort of compare and contrast the difference between
One of the things that we've done in screening members is make sure they understand we have a process. Can you commit the time to it? Dinner meetings, screening sessions twice a month, dinner meetings once a month, frequent diligence sessions, you know, periodically during the month. So we're asking our members to do quite a bit. It's a team sport. You're not going to be taking on the leadership of a deal is challenging and time consuming. So we're asking members occasion to step up and lead a deal. And that's going to be very time consuming. You're not promoting the deal, but you're organizing the deal and the process and making sure that adequate numbers of meetings are held, the diligence is being properly delegated and collected, posted to the website. The founders are making presentations. You're integrating the appropriate feedback into the presentations. The Q&As are well prepared. That kind of thing. You're getting a lot of members engaged in the process. So, it's a team sport. You're trying to get people that have domain expertise to be in the process to help out the other members. And then on the next deal, maybe you're doing less work and somebody else steps up to be the lead. Large net worth individuals, they're really pretty much doing it on their own. They really are not integrated in a group. It's not a team sport for them, and they, come and go, and, it's up to sometimes the entrepreneurs find them, and sometimes they don't. So it's much more problematical whether they show up or not.
Got it. So I guess the entrepreneur should be aware that the angel investment group process is a lot more formal. You're talking about screening sessions, diligence sessions.
Yeah, and some
Q&A.
Entrepreneurs complain that, geez, it's a lot of process, four or five networks, a lot of meetings. I'd rather just find three or four guys that are going to put in $100,000. Well, yeah, no question. Yeah, but those guys are harder to find. So it's really sometimes it amazes me that entrepreneurs complain, but that's the price of raising money. And in such early stage situations. But what is also going on, though, is that in today's market, the big concern is financing risk. Angels step up and do the Series A round, the first preferred round of stock. It lasts the company 9 to 15 months, ideally, and hopefully the company doesn't run out of money. Before that, and is well into a fundraising to raise the next round in advance of its needs. But oftentimes the angels expect venture capital guys to step in, and sometimes we find ourselves, we put money in a company that the venture capital community doesn't seem to be very interested in. So we're going to have to fund it or close it. And so that's sometimes disappointing to angels. And so what we're really trying to do now and have been is inviting the communities, the regions, let's call them, the venture funds that are here in this greater LA region, greater Southern California area, to look at our deals early on so that we can get some feedback from them. Sometimes they co-invest small amounts to get a seat at the table, and sometimes they say, hey, this is something we want to track. Let's stay in touch because we'd like to be your first call for the B round. So we want to make sure that we have good feedback from our VC community as we go into deals.
Got it. Now, as a result of that, are the deals funded by the Tech Coast Angels? Are they going to be exclusively, technology type deals that are within the VC appetite, or does it possibly go out into, retail or other types of ventures that are?
It depends on how much money is needed. If it's capital efficient, we have been, we do retail. We've done some products. We have funded companies that'll never raise venture capital, just because there's enough domain expertise around the table that the members understand the business and they are willing to take the funding risk on their own. Sometimes that has worked and sometimes that hasn't. So we are not just about technology. We've done a pretty diversified portfolio. There certainly is a lot of internet component to the business model, software and so on. But we have done some offbeat investments. We're not investing in restaurants, and we're not investing in shopping centers, but we are investing in consumer products and, you know, medical products and some biotech occasionally, you know, medical devices, things that may or may not be traditional venture capital situations. I sometimes discourage it because I say, guys, there's, you know, if you're going to fund this, you're going to fund it from now till you sell it, and you make sure you there's enough capital around the table and the appetite is there and that the members reserve enough money for follow-ons because you can't count on third-party financing.
Got it. Now, you just mentioned, you know, now till you sell it. What are the angels' expectations on cashing out in their investments? Do they expect a an acquisition, and what time frame, and in what type of returns do angel investors
seek? Well, that's a great question. I mean, the model's changing. The time factor is going up. I think when the angels started this in 97, there was a legitimate opportunity that your better companies end up being public companies. I think over the last 10 years, a lot of things have changed on Wall Street that makes the smaller IPO, extinct. And, you know, the minimum market caps for public offerings today are probably north of 300 million. And,
right.
And it's just not, and it's an expensive process. And there's just not a lot of venture-backed IPOs anymore. So everybody is kind of in the mindset of, well, who is going to buy it if it's going to be a trade sale, an M&A exit? Who's a likely buyer? And as the company matures, you're trying to figure out that more and more intently to make sure that the company's got strategic conversations, it's familiar in the industry, it's done a good job marketing itself so that it does show up on the radars of the appropriate buyers. So we're almost exclusively dependent now on M&A exits, and unfortunately, M&A exits take a bit longer. Buyers want to see things maturing. There's the odd exception where a Google or a Yahoo or Microsoft or Oracle will come in and buy some small technology because it's a piece of a bigger puzzle, but it's not.
Right.
You really can't count on that. So unfortunately, I think the average length of company holding period now is kind of 7 to 8 years. So it's putting some real strain on the whole angel thesis that I can get a 10x return in 5 to 6 years. That was the original expectation. And with the 10-year going longer, valuations have to be appropriate so you can make your money and make sure that it is a venture capital fundable deal so that there is enough money that can take it to the full term.
Got it. So is that 10x figure over 5 to 6 years, has that changed as well, or has that pretty much stayed the same in terms of your
I think the 10x has stayed the same. I think the 5 to 6 years is probably 7 or better. So I think most VCs recognize that. I think angels are now realizing that. We've seen a couple of situations where there are some startups that to organize, kind of private equity interest exchanges so that angels that are in a company 5 or 6 years and it's done really well and it's on its fourth round of venture capital, angels have an opportunity to get out, because the later rounds of venture capital are waiting for even a bigger outcome, and that just delays the opportunity for the angels to ever see any money. So there may be some solutions to this problem, but the angels tend to get locked up for a long time, and
right.
Oftentimes there's piles of preferred stock on top of them, which can be very dilutive to the eventual outcome. But 10x is still the expectation, and like I say, it's putting pressure on your thinking about how much do I have to reserve for this company and what should be the appropriate pre-money value.
Got it. Now, where do entrepreneurs go to look for angel investors? And maybe you can talk with the Tech Coast Angels. Is the preferred contact to go to your website and fill out a form, or is it to find an individual member? And that member then presents to the group, and if so, How do you suggest finding that initial angel member?
Well, that's just good networking. And there's plenty of events. Tech Coast Angels are in Los Angeles, Orange County, and San Diego. Members are actively involved in a variety of organizations that have panel discussions on entrepreneur financing, venture capital financing. So we're easy to find, and often the better entrepreneurs are really good at finding out who they need to talk to and getting appropriate introductions, whether it's from their law firm or their accounting firm or their friends and other CEOs that have been successful. There are mentorship programs going on here in Los Angeles that are encouraging entrepreneurs to work with other VC-backed CEOs as mentors and try to make those introductions. But we're easy to find. The website is really where you have to go to file the application. It certainly helps if you can file that application with the coaching of one or two members that has an interest in what you're doing and is willing to introduce you at a screening session. So the more personal touch that you can put into the process, the more you understand the vocabulary, and some of the issues in raising, outside money, third-party money, other people's money, the better you're going to be. So it's a lot of good entrepreneurs put the time in to understand that process. I can't stress that enough. Valuation, amount of money, team building, experience, organizing your founding team, being properly prepared with the appropriate information, being prepared for diligence when it does come, all of those things makes a huge difference in whether or not you're going to raise money or not.
Agreed. So one of the lessons you said was, preparing the appropriate information. What information does an angel want to see before deciding to invest in a company, and in what order? I know that Tech Coast Angels has a specific form that they want filled out, but what about
template is fairly detailed so that it was originally designed so that we wouldn't just get people posting executive summaries. We wanted specific ingredients: competition, financial model, management team, directors, business case, description of product, feature matrix. Those we wanted those kinds of things thought mm-hmm. through and presented to the site, so the application screening team has something to go with, as opposed to a self-promoting executive summary or a brief set of slides. So we really wanted to make entrepreneurs be thoughtful about the application. But the currency today is largely PowerPoint, largely a set of slides that can be conveyed in 20 minutes, with a real premium based on clarity and coherence and business model and explaining what's different, what's unique, how they're going to get paid, how they differentiate themselves, how well they know the competition, what are the primary assumptions of the financial model. So ultimately, it's a PowerPoint, possibly an executive summary, a financial model, competitive matrix, organization chart, bios for the team, cap table, any kind of history that's relevant, marketing materials, website, those kind of things. Those are all the ingredients. The issue of whether or not you need a 30, 40-page business plan, it's more about a process, and I think I like to say that always helps, because that the more work that goes into that, the better preparation, better thought that's gone into the business model in terms of the logistics makes sense. Oftentimes, mm-hmm. companies that have great PowerPoints and have not done the business planning really fall out of diligence because members say, these guys just don't have a clue how to get this thing started. And, it's very clear they haven't done any thoughtful work on a business plan, and it really shows, and I'm losing confidence. So the execution skills often get questioned if the business plan is not there. It doesn't need to be in, in a PDF, but it's the ingredients have to be there. So I'm kind of old school there, that the business plan is helpful, but believe me, the way that business plan is communicated is in a series of PowerPoint decks. Early presentation, first meeting presentation, and then a bunch of subset diligence sessions, financial model, competition, product, roadmap, marketing and sales, you know, how we get paid, how do we go to market, what's the hiring that we need to do, what are the key positions we need to fill based to fill out the org chart. So those are all the issues that come up in the diligence.
Got it. And in doing that, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see entrepreneurs making when pitching to angel investors?
I could write a book on that, and I've threatened to myself several on that. Where I think the most common is that the early funding, the early friends and family round, is not properly documented, or it was sold at an outrageous valuation, so now they're coming to raise money on the expectations that the angel pre-money, the angel valuation, is now high because, it has to be because we sold our friends and family round at a $5 million pre-money, and so we have to be that or better. And it says, guys, this is that made no sense at all. Your pre-revenue, this is maybe $1.5 million to $2 million pre-money, not five.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of companies get lost in the valuation. A lot of entrepreneurs don't spend the time to understand the vocabulary of fundraising. They don't understand term sheets. They don't understand the process, forgetting the Tech Coast Angel process. They don't understand what it takes to have a board, a cap table, and that kind of thing.
Got it.
So I think mistakes are most commonly valuation, most commonly not listening and not being very coachable, not thinking about how much money they need to raise and how to stage it, not thinking about the go-to-market. How do I actually get my first five customers? Who's going to be my, who's going to generate the first years of revenue? Is it the CEO? Is it, somebody else? How well is the team, and this is a huge case where a good founder recruits weak team members to be his founding team. Misappropriate backgrounds, misappropriate experience, misappropriate domain expertise. So a lot of founders, end up recruiting the wrong people in key spots, and it often breaks down in diligence. And people think, geez, this team is pretty weak, pretty young, pretty inexperienced, don't really know it. He has no background in this before. What is he thinking? Just because it's a good idea doesn't mean he's the one to execute it or she's to execute it. So those are some of the most obvious, and I think it is inadequate. And one of the things that a lot of entrepreneurs try to have answers to everything, and entrepreneurs not listening and not looking for coaching and feedback, not looking for a partnership, but just looking for the money, and not really understanding that your early investors is going to be a 6-7 year partner, where that compatibility and chemistry is really important. Or you might have taken on another case is a good example where you have some early money is raised. Now you're looking for TCA money, and the early money and the could be a family office, could be a particular individual, could be who feels that they're still in charge, and the TCA is just we just need the money. We don't need any input. We don't need a partner. We just need to take the money, and we're trying to get the best value we can, and that's all I need. So that tone, that kind of mindset, blows up in this. If not in the presentation in the first meeting.
Got it.
Where you got chemistry issues that'll never be solved.
Now, when you talk about this 6-7 year partnership, what about angel investors taking a seat on the board? Is that common?
Absolutely common. Really important that the best member take that seat, the one that can add the most value. It's always the case. We oftentimes want to stay through the next round, and then we go to an observer round. But we want that board member to be, very active with the company. We want that board member to hold the CEO accountable for good information. and reporting back to the fellow TCA investors. It's a delicate issue because we want that board member to be our spokesperson for the company in follow-on rounds. The company gets into trouble. We want to, you know, we lean on that person to help us, you know, get good information and make so we can make good decisions about what to do about the company. Does it need more money? Does it need new people? Does it need a new product? Does it need a new marketing campaign? We really want our members to be involved in that.
And does a board member get compensated in this case? From
the company? Sometimes, yes, but not cash. It's rarely cash. It's sometimes the company will, the compensation committee of the company will put together a stock option plan for key employees and designate some of those options for directors. It's not a lot of it's not real meaningful, but it is. We certainly expect that someone who's playing a very active role for the benefit of others should get some option package, but oftentimes those have limited value.
Got it. What about protecting ideas? As you know, a lot of entrepreneurs are very protective of their ideas, borderline paranoid on letting people know what they're doing, and you know, concerned about non-disclosures, etc. How do angel investors handle that? What, when, if ever, will they sign a non-disclosure, and how does that work?
That's a good question, and a lot of first-time entrepreneurs are paranoid about it, and it's misplaced paranoia. We rarely sign an NDA going into a deal. There are some cases where we've agreed to sign an NDA as part of intense due diligence on a particular area of particular focus of the product. But we really tell entrepreneurs it's really a business model issue. We don't think you should be telling us the secret sauce. We need to understand what it is in general, but we don't need to know much about it early on. And if we do get into diligence, we can give you some comfort that we certainly want to keep it secret because we're going to be your investors, and we don't want that value outside of the company. And we can really work that in the diligence. But entrepreneurs that come in into the screening process and say, "Well, I want to sign an NDA before I show you my business plan," they go, "Well, if it's that easily copied, and it's not a good sign for the home team." And you know, we certainly have a policy where we don't sign NDAs when we're just getting to know you. We don't want you to tell us anything that would be included in an NDA, and let's put that off on a diligence issue and solve it when we really have to.
Got it. Just one last very very broad question for you is, what else did I forget to ask you that you think an entrepreneur should know about raising capital from angel investors or angel investor networks?
Well, I think that a good entrepreneur does his homework and understands he's trying to put his own business plan together, how his product's going to win customers, how he's going to beat competition, how he's going to recruit a world-class team, how he's going to build value and ultimately manage an exit where somebody's going to pay a lot of money for the company. So we certainly want entrepreneurs to be thinking about those kinds of things. But the entrepreneur also needs to think about the business plan for the investors. How are they going to make money? How much money do I need? Where can I be thoughtful about spending it? How can I be really efficient in this use and make sure that I'm not just spraying my marketing dollars around because I don't really know how to do that? If the investors are trying to make 10 times their money, how am I going to show them a way that they can make 10 times that's credible? You know, I got to be thoughtful about who's the exit. We said already it's going to be a trade sale. It's not going to be an IPO. Don't think it's going to be an IPO if the market is telling you something else. I think good entrepreneurs understand how investors make money and that it's definitely not a loan. It's a partnership. You're willing to listen. You're careful about who you bring on as investors. You want value-added investors. You want active investors. You're committing yourself to full disclosure and transparency. You're going to give them a lot of information. You're going to educate them on the business so they can help you when you need it, and you're going to listen to that advice when you get it. So I think if you put a little bit of effort into how do my investors make money so this is a win-win, is something a lot of guys just don't do. A lot of entrepreneurs think about their business model and just say, well, you know, how you make your money, I don't know. I'm hoping we'll make a lot. I'm hoping I make a lot of money. Whether you make money or not is depends. And if you're not thinking about that very very clearly, you're not gonna get through the diligence. So I think more time spent on what's the outcome of this and how can I make it a win-win for my investors.
That's a great point. That's a series of great points. John, this was extremely helpful. I think that the entrepreneurs that listen to this call are going to get a ton of value and realize exactly what they need to do in order to prepare and approach angel investors and ultimately be successful in raising angel investors and growing their company.
Well, I hope that's the case, David, and I hope they listen. And if we ever need to go back and dig into any of these sectors or individual ideas, happy to make a return call.
Great. Thank you so much, John.
Good luck with your company.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right.